Welcome back to the Average to Savage Show with Scaletti, a podcast that will help you overcome your limiting beliefs, setbacks, and fears to create the life you were destined to live. Matt Scaletti here with a very special guest, Andrea Flack Weatherald. Andrea, get ready for this. I can't wait to share this. She is a social worker, comedian, and founder of Mindful Improv Thinking, which is a framework for engaging restorative conversations with skills from mindfulness practices and improvised comedy. Her book, The Funny Thing About Forgiveness, is available on Amazon, Kindle, Audible, and online wherever books are sold. We're going to get into forgiveness as well. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
I cannot wait myself. So there's a bunch of different ways I'm sure we could start. Do you want to just start with how you got to where you are today? Like, how does somebody become a comedian slash entrepreneur slash mom, all these different things you have going on? What's the backstory?
I'll keep it to 2 hours in this retelling.
I thought you were going to say 2 minutes. I like it. 2 hours. Okay.
So my degree is in social work, and that's was my first professional jobs was working in like a primary social work setting. I am still a social worker. I'm just using it not in a way I originally imagined when they handed me my diploma. So while I was working in a primary setting, I learned about ways that you can support behavior change. Like, ultimately, behavior change is the thing that we need to make the world a better place, right? Like, each of us, not looking for ways other people need to change their behavior, but each of us has to find a way to come to terms with what we can be doing better and how we can do that for ourselves without falling into a shame spiral. And so I was working on a research study that was specifically focused on addiction, but I mean, it's transferable content, you know, like how you come alongside someone and help them find their own internal motivation to make that change. That was the whole deal with the research study. Loved it super much. It was a time-limited research study. After that, taking some left turns that surprised everyone that I feel like it's hard to say in a nutshell, so I'll just skip to the good part.
I love it.
I started producing and performing comedy in Pittsburgh. I mean, I went to a workshop. It's not that hard. I went to a workshop because I thought it would be fun, and it was, but it was also like deep soul level church that I was not expecting. Like, it really snuck up on me how meaningful it was. And then I just loved it a bunch. So I started taking a ton of classes and auditioning for teams. And then I started doing this work totally by accident because I just never shut up about how meaningful I thought improv was. And people started asking me to come to their stuff.
Oh, that's how it all went down.
That's how it went down.
this is a random question, but since I shared that I took one improv class, do you think everybody can benefit from improv?
I mean, no, I think a lot of people can, but one thing that I've really learned is, like, having taught thousands of people at this point, is that, like, it truly, you know, here's what it is. Improv can help everyone. Improv classes are very overwhelming for some people. Like, I remember the first time I trained a team and there was someone who had autism. And he was very overwhelmed. Like, he was not having a good time. And I felt really responsible for not having ever thought, like, how can I make this, just how to accommodate and be respectful for people that are like, I can't do this, you know? So I have definitely learned that improv, in the sense of, like, haha, joke 'em up, fart improv games, like, stuff, like, it's super fun. And I still love, anytime people want to bring me out for a keynote and whatever, if they have time, I always offer to, even just for free, do a workshop where we can actually play the games and stuff, because it's just so fun. It is such a fun way and a disarming way to learn these skills that every time, 100% of the time, will make the world a braver, kinder, and safer place if people learn these skills and then use them.
Well, I mean, you hit on one of the words that I can't wait to talk about, which is bravery. And we discussed this real quick, but I'm ready to dive in. Brave, having brave conversations. And it seems like that's a topic that you are very good at helping people get through and have with in some capacity. Can you speak a little bit to how that's meaningful to you and the impact it can have, having brave conversations?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the difference between feeling alone in your marriage or in your office or in your neighborhood and not feeling alone is how much human connection you feel, not how many people are around you, but whether or not you really feel connected to them. And so often we postpone brave conversations until we feel like we're ready, until we feel like there's enough trust. But what we don't realize is that silence builds resentment, not trust. That's not how we build trust, is by postponing brave conversations. Like, the opportunity to really see each other and know each other happens in brave conversations. And I know that my favorite thing that ever happens to me is when people, I come in usually people's offices and or company events or whatever, and they tell me, email me later and say, yeah, this is great for work, but it is completely changing my marriage. Or I feel hope in my relationship with my dad for the first time. Or I forgave somebody who assaulted someone in my family. Like, I hear these stories that are like deeply personal. And it's like, oh my gosh, like I still have chills, even just remembering people coming up to me after an event or whatever and sharing with me, like, my family is reading your book together and it's changing some things. Like, that is what I want more than anything else in the world. Like, I care about people's work, but only because I care about people. Like, I don't care how many toasters your team sells. I care whether or not you leave any interaction with me realizing all of life is improv, like all of it is improv. And so whatever dynamics that you're telling yourself about what you're not allowed to say to your boss or you'll get fired, or what you can't say because these are the expectations your parents have for you, like, friend, that's a script, and it's an old script, and it's a sucky script. And the truth is that life is improv. So you actually have infinity options.
I love that. I got to re-listen to that. That was really good. You kind of gave me chills going on that little speech right there too. Okay. So, but I want to dive in even further, because I love this idea of brave conversations. And that was so powerful with the people that you've helped and how it's not just business. They're seeing that overflow into other areas of their lives. For anyone listening to this, let's say they're feeling even a little bit of resentment, or there's a discussion they want to have and they're nervous to have. Is it better just to go in and start having the discussion, or is it better to prepare and try to almost be ready for whatever happens in that discussion?
Yeah, this is sort of the central focus of my book, The Funny Thing About Forgiveness, because I teach that forgiveness is the prerequisite for confrontation, not the other way around. We don't walk into these brave conversations thinking, well, we'll see what they have to say. I'm willing to be the bigger man and hear them out. You know, we'll see if they earn my forgiveness or not. Yeah. Instead, it's like you start from a place of forgiveness. So the preparation work that I am forever encouraging people to do is inside work to hash this out for yourself. And so I don't know how deep we want to get into this, but I don't teach that forgiveness is like erasing painful experiences. As a social worker, as a foster adoptive parent, that's just not how trauma works. First of all, that's also just not how anger works. I don't think it's helpful to tell folks, you know, to forget about it. You know, forgive and forget is bullshit advice that I will never give anybody. But I do think that, you know, forgiveness is not about looking backwards and being like, I'm no longer affected by injustice or trauma or whatever. But instead, I teach that it's about looking forward and realizing, yes, and yep, these things happen. And every good thing is still possible for me. That person didn't somehow take a big fat ladle and scoop out of my tub of available opportunities and like take from me possible joy or growth or whatever. That's just not how it worked. You know, like, whatever the situation is, I promise you, you can still be, do, have, achieve, succeed, whatever whatever in the future. Yeah. So when I think where people go wrong with the should I prepare for a brave conversation thing, because they're like, well, I can't just wing it. And I'm like, well, that's not what it is. That's not what it is. And I get into this in the book, but improv is so much more than just walking out on stage and saying whatever comes to mind. It's about listening. It's about surrendering to this moment. It's about letting go of if you had some other idea, you thought this was what this person's idea was, and then you realize, oh, I misunderstood. This is what they're doing. Then you let go. It's all about what is happening now. How do I serve the scene now? That's the skill. That's the skill for brave conversation. We can't do that when we walk in and we've got our whole bullet list, all the stuff we wanted to say. You know, we tell them, just listen. I need you to just listen. It's like,
oh yeah, that's no good.
You're going to miss out. Like, you're going to miss out, you know? Anyhow, I get all down into that for a really long time.
I love this. I think this is really powerful because, and how about forgiveness? When you're talking about forgiveness, because I was thinking about this before we hopped on, forgiving others versus, I don't even know if versus is the right word, forgiving others and forgiving yourself are both things that you see people need help with?
I would say forgiving themselves is usually harder for them than forgiving someone else. Because when you're the victim, when something has happened to you, you're sort of able to say like, oh, look, I can look forward and see that every good thing is available. But if you've hurt someone else, you can't change their lens for them. Whatever limiting beliefs you caused them to start having about themselves and what was possible, you can't pull those weeds for them. They have to do that work. So if you're seeing continuing collateral damage in their lives, it's really hard not to just beat yourself up over and over and over and over. So that takes really diligent work. You know, it takes really diligent work to know that if you've made right whatever you can make right, they're holding the keys. And that's a really hard form of surrender, but it is possible and it is necessary.
Yeah, that's really well said. And so to get into, like, I guess I love how you said forgiveness first, especially when you're having these brave conversations. Can you give us an example? And I'm just thinking one off the top of my head, but let's say we could use a work or personal situation, but let's say it's your boss or coworker is not, you don't feel is being very nice to you, or there's tension there and you mm-hmm. want to bring it up. Is there ever a time to not bring it up, or is it always better, do you think, to say something?
I think that you'll have that answer when you're in alignment, because you're not always the scene partner that can build best with someone. I've seen this happen different times where people want to take on more than their share. They don't trust that there's lots of scene partners. Life is improv, this whole thing. And there's lots of scene partners. And maybe you don't have the relationship with this person where they can hear it from you for whatever reason. There's all kinds of reasons. Like, it would be really hard for a white man to tell me, I share in the book that I'm a survivor of sexual assault when I was a child in the church where my dad was a pastor.
Oh my
God. It's really hard for, especially when I was a kid, for him or for someone in his family to be like, you're going to need to move on from this. You're going to need to find a way to be okay with this. Like, that's not, every scene partner is not able, for so many different reasons, to speak into someone's life. Same advice might come from someone else. You know, like, I didn't share this in the book, but it's also true that I was really afraid to go back to my church after this happened to me. And my little friend, who was my same age, came with me to the room where it happened and prayed with me in that room. That's something that not everyone could have done, but another little girl my same age could do, you know? And so I think it's really important to ask ourselves, like, what do I really want here? Because you're always equipped and allowed. It's improv. There's no rules. It's improv. You're allowed to let someone know you're mad. Yeah. You have permission to be like, I didn't like that. That didn't work for me. So you're always allowed. If your boss has said something, I had a boss one time hand me my first paycheck. I was new at the company, and I was still being handed a paper check because I think it was in the time of direct deposit. It just hadn't been set up yet, is the truth.
Yeah.
But he handed it to me. He said, "Now don't spend it all on shoes." And I was like, "Why would you say that to me?" And in my internal story was, this is sexism. He said that to me. He did not say that to a single male employee, I am sure.
Yeah.
So I start telling myself this whole story. And that's not always super helpful. I can never know for sure what was in someone's head or what was their intentions, but I'm always allowed to say, "I don't like that. Please don't say that to me next time." Like, I always have permission to say my thing. But what I think is really important to ask yourself is, like, what am I hoping to get out of this? Because had I launched into that, is sexism. Like, this is what people are talking about. Why do you think you can't keep any women at this office? You casually said that to me in my interview, and I somehow didn't receive that as a red flag. But like, why do you think that might be? You know, if you launch into something, it's not about whether or not you're allowed. You're allowed. You can justify saying whatever you want, but you have to realize the laws of momentum are the same for emotional momentum. So if you come in, that person's going to be an equal and opposite reaction. It just works the same way, you know? So if what you want is to be able to see this person grow, see this person learn something, you have to understand that you can't do whatever is justifiable. You have to do what also honors your scene partner, because it's brave to say your truth. It's brave to speak truth to power. This dude was the president of this company, and it was my, you know, 9th day of employment. It would have been brave to say, "That sounded like sexism to me." It's brave. But you know what else is brave? Learning in front of someone.
Yeah.
Telling someone, "I hadn't thought of it that way. I'm sorry." And you're not going to get that type of soft reaction if you haven't created an environment that's safe enough to learn in, you know? So yeah. I think people ask me that question a lot. Like, do you always have to? No, there's no obligation. This is improv. You have scene partners, you know, it can be someone else's turn. You don't have to. Are you always allowed? Sure. Is it always helpful? No. Like,
yeah, that's true. I mean, those are all great points. And I love how you keep using scene partners, because it's getting me into the mindset of everything is improv. And that's just, it's true.
Doesn't it just help you hold it a little bit lighter?
That's exactly,
like, everything.
I didn't know how to put it.
Hold it lighter.
You put it the perfect way. It feels a little bit lighter, which in my thinking, if it's a little bit lighter, now there's a better chance I'm going to have that brave conversation because it doesn't feel as heavy.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think, I'm just thinking of the brave conversations, do you think once somebody starts having them, and maybe they do have some vulnerability in there, I like how you said that, with maybe you apologize first or take some accountability on yourself, but then does that breed more brave conversations? Does it get easier the more people continuously do it?
In some relationships, it does. In other relationships, the brave conversations reveal something really painful, which is like, this person doesn't respect me. You know, like, it wasn't just a figment of my imagination. They straight up don't like me. And like, or I'm being sort of silly about it, but sometimes people, you know, go after the brave conversation. They say the thing, they ask the brave question, and then they find out, like, this marriage is not going to work. Like, that's what the truth is that it's not going to work. And that's sad. That's really sad. But what do you want? Do you want to be in relationships that aren't strong enough for the truth? Like, do you want to, you know, just live in that silent, awkward, like, I don't want to know the truth, so I'll just be pretend? Like, no, yeah. We don't want that. We want real human connection, you know? And what I'm fond of telling people is that there's nothing that I will teach anyone that's going to make it not scary to ask a real question. You know, it's going to, like I say, 37 seconds of boob sweat. It's just going to happen. It's just going to feel scary. Like, I can't change that for you. That's what makes it brave.
Like, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
That's what makes it brave. I can't change that for you. But what you'll realize most of the time, I mean, I have had so many of these conversations, it would be impossible for me to even wager a guess how many, but like, I'm trying to think, it's such a small number of times that I'm like struggling to even think of an example. of pushing through that fear and not seeing someone say, I'm sorry, or totally surprise me and be like, you know what? I know I'm actually seeing a counselor about this exact thing, or my wife left because of this, or like real talk. Like you realize that you're not talking to a monster. You're talking to a human person. And then all of a sudden it's like, we're just two human beings. You know, we're just two people that are talking right now. And the other really important thing that I tell people is like, it's a really important thing to know when to edit the scene. Is this something that you learned in your improv class? Scene edits? Did you get there yet?
I don't know if we got there or not. I mean, it's been a few years, but refresh my memory.
Yeah, it's okay. So, and did you do short form or long form improv? Do you remember?
Like, what's the difference? Like, how long is each one?
Short form would be like games, more like what you would see on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
And long form is more like a made up play where you get a suggestion from the audience, or maybe you hear a story or a song or something. And then there's like scenes that are made up.
We did a little bit of both. And it was much harder for me in the long form when you're just kind of rolling with a story and you have no clue where it's going.
That's my favorite form.
It was hilarious. I mean, it was funny.
Yeah. So a scene edit in long form improv means that you have to in some way indicate this scene is over. So sometimes someone runs in front of the stage and then the performers exit, that clears the stage for whatever's going to happen next. And I tell people to be on the lookout for when it's time to edit the scene. And that is a difficult skill to learn. Knowing when to edit the scene as an improviser, I've been to workshops that were that was just about knowing when to edit the scene, because it's so tempting to want to wait for a big laugh, to want to wait for that thing that feels really satisfying, you know? But sometimes the merciful thing is to allow this to be over. We can always revisit these characters later. They're not abandoned. It's not quitting. It's not giving up. We'll revisit these themes, these characters, whatever they've initiated. We'll come back to it when we've had time for more inspiration from other stuff. New information will get created in the show, and then we'll come back to it. Nothing is forgotten. That's a really major thing in improv. Nothing is forgotten. And it's the same for Brave Conversations. Sometimes we want to drag it on. We want to get that resolution. We want that satisfying apology or that satisfying, now we're on the same page. And we want to drag it on, keep poking, keep pulling, keep, you know, going. But the reality is, there's no time scarcity. We'll come back to it later. Let's edit the scene. Let's notice when we've done what we can do for now and trust the unfolding nature. This is improv. Nothing's going to get forgotten. We'll come back to it when we have more information, when we have fresh inspiration. That's how we honor ourselves and our creative energy for that. That's how we honor our scene partner. Give them some space to let it marinate, you know, and then we'll come back to it.
You're so good at relating this to the improv world in real life. And I really, it's the way that you're describing it. It's really, I'm thinking about different relationships in my life and conversations I could potentially have. And it does feel like it's lessening the tension the way that you're describing it. Because I think in our heads, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of times I think, oh my goodness, this conversation, if I have it, is going to implode and we're going to hate each other by the end of it. And then you have it and it's like, you feel more connected than ever. And then I think, what took me so long to have that discussion?
Right.
Wow.
So often I have that experience, and I can think of times that I have walked away feeling like, ugh, I don't know how this thing is going to play out. You know, I don't yet have that resolution on like what I think is going to happen. But what helps me in those moments is to remember the deep truth. That this discomfort is one paragraph in my life story. Mm-hmm. Like, deep truth is there are hundreds of ways this could be okay. If I get fired, okay, that will be embarrassing. I won't like it. I won't be the end of the story. You know, if this person decides they don't want to be my friend anymore, I'll be sad. And I'm allowed to be sad. I'm allowed to cry about it, allowed to eat Ben and Jerry's about it, you know, like crush a box of Girl Scout cookies about it. Like, that's allowed. Feel your feelings. There's no erasure in improv. It's yes and acceptance of what is, acceptance of everything that is, and building on top of it, whatever the shit we want next.
I love that. That's so good. And I love how you said, I wrote that down. The discomfort that you're feeling is one paragraph in your life story. That is, That it almost just makes it feel like it's not this overwhelming thing. And that would help me. That is helping me realize that life goes on, and it's not this one snippet is not the end of my life.
All of your joy and hope isn't riding on, like, the stakes aren't that high.
Yeah.
You know, it's not riding on this one relationship, this one job, this one opportunity, this one anything. And that's not to say that those people don't matter. People matter, and I value people. And when brave conversations or things have panned out to where, you know, paths have parted, of course that breaks my heart. I don't want that to happen. Like, I would love to be in right relationship with every human person on the planet if that were possible. Sadly, that just is not how it is in life. So.
Well, you're right. But I think that's a great point too, as far as not everybody's going to like us, and we're not going to be best friends with everyone. I mean, that's just the reality of it, right? And I don't know why. I know I've had the thought where, like, if 10 people like you and one doesn't, sometimes I focus on the one. And it's like, well, why?
Oh, dude. If I'm in a weird mental spot and I'm sitting in traffic, I am reliving times that I have bombed on stage, or times that, like, I knew that this one person that was on my improv team, when you're on a house team, the theater puts people on your team. You don't get to just, like, pick who your teammates are. And some, you're not, like, all besties. You're people who work together, you know, basically, you know? And there was this dude, and I just knew, like, this dude does not like me. Like, I don't know why he doesn't like me. He just does not like me. And because I had not, I mean, because I'm a person and just whatever, I'm a human person. And I just was like, I just want his approval so bad. So I would, like, try so hard. He'd be on stage and I'd be like, try to get in his scene. Like, I'd just be like, I want you to like me so bad.
Is that funny?
I ran into him just in life. He had his kids at a restaurant and I had my kids at the same restaurant. And I went up and said hello to him and he was like, hi, and would not even have a conversation with me. And I kid you not, even with the work that I do for a living, I just remembered that moment last week while I was sitting in traffic and was like, there's a man in Pittsburgh that does not like me.
That is hilarious. I'm sure there's one or two in Pittsburgh that don't like me either. So that's okay. We have people that don't like us. What are we going to do, right?
What are you going to do? You're going to move on and keep loving the people around you and just doing your thing. It's okay. It's safe for not everyone to like you. I have to remind myself, like, I would really love for millions of people to read this book and future books. And so it is really good practice for me to accept when I encounter people that don't like me and realize, ooh, I can still have my joy. I can still, like, live through this experience, you know, because it's good practice. Because someday folks are going to know about mindful improv thinking. It's going to be a whole thing. It's going to change.
It's all started with you. I mean, that's what I said before we started. You're the first person I've chatted with that focuses on this exact topic. And that's why I was so curious to hear exactly what you speak about. And so the funny thing about forgiveness is the book title. Is there anything else you want to share, like, regarding the book or what people will get out of it? Is it everything that we just discussed, though it'll be easier?
Yes.
Not easier, but maybe there will have the tools or be more willing to have those brave conversations and forgive themselves and others. And
yeah, it's really a marriage between my work as a social worker and understanding what is happening in our brains when we try to do better, you know? And there's a, like, chart for chart relationship to what's happening when we try to forgive, and what is forgiveness really, and how do we do the work of forgiveness? Like, we know what it feels like when we no longer imagine, like, punching someone in the throat when we see them. Like, we, like, mentally realize, oh, I don't think I feel throat punchy towards this person anymore. But, like, what I have realized in my life is that if I'm not proactive about that, these low-key resentments will start steering the ship for me. I'll start not taking risks when I could, or I'll start, you know, just, like, believing stuff that doesn't have to be true. It's as true as I let it be. So proactive forgiveness is how we make sure that we are taking back our own autonomy of our story. And so the book is about, like, how to do that, logistics of forgiveness. And so that's what they will learn, logistics of forgiveness and how to use mindful improv skills to do that. And then to have brave conversations.
Well said. Logistics of forgiveness. I like that a lot.
Thank you.
Like you said, forgiveness is a prerequisite for brave conversations. There's so many good takeaways here.
Thank you.
Oh, I mean, I love it. This is fascinating to me. So what I know briefly we discussed, but there's two things that are coming up next for you. Do you want to, I'm curious to hear more about both of them myself, but I know one is called Freedom Weekend, right?
Yes.
Which I love the name. Do you want to share what that is all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So my work, like I'm happy to come to people if they have their own retreats or events. I love it. I love coming out and doing that. But I have two things that are my own that I'm inviting other people to get tickets for. Freedom Weekend is October 13th to 15th, and it's a mindful improv retreat where the theme is cultivating resilient joy and optimism. So the whole purpose of it is there'll be a series of mindful improv workshops interspersed with different adventure activities. There's this like ropes challenge, and they can go horseback riding and kayaking and stuff. But in between like adventure times of just clearing your head and trying new things, there'll be mindful improv workshops centered around how can we hold difficult realities of life without trying to erase them and pretending that they don't matter or whatever. How do we hold difficult truth and hope together at the same time? And so this is geared for anyone at all that is pouring their heart into making the world a better place and is just feeling tired. Compassion fatigue is a real thing. And so if that is resonating with you, if you are a helper in any stretch, a teacher, a social worker, a pastor, anythinger that is pouring your heart into solving a problem that you care about or just trying to make the world better and you're feeling exhausted, that is who Freedom Weekend is designed to serve. And then the other thing is Brave Church.
Ohio, right? I just want to make sure.
Yes, it's in Northeast Ohio. Yeah, at Camp Winoa.
Okay.
And if you want more info, you can go to andbeyondimprov.com/freedomweekend2023.
Oh, good. You already have a website. We'll link that into the show notes as well. Okay, that's
perfect. Oh, great. Okay.
And you have more fun things going on.
Yes, the second fun thing is a series of virtual trainings. That's a 5-week series, and it's called Brave Church, and it's specifically for pastors or church leaders. Like sometimes churches have pastoral teams or multiple pastors, but the goal is for people who desire to live in love and lead faith communities to set a good example within their churches. Like I am a woman of faith, and I really believe in what the church can be at its best. And I don't know if you noticed that grownups in this country lose their dang minds during election years and leading up to it, but we're headed into another one.
Oh, yeah.
I would really love, really, really, really love for the church to set an example of how we can hold each other accountable to the truth, how we can disagree in love, learn from each other, be vulnerable enough to learn a thing, you know. I believe we can do this. I believe we can. And I believe that if we don't, we're going to get distracted from our primary purpose of serving people. And that is not what I want to see happen in the church. And I believe that there's a lot of pastors of purple congregations. You know, it is not, the church is not, despite popular opinion, the church is not completely one-sided in this thing. It's just not. I have met with a lot of pastors, and there is diversity of thought within the church. And so anyhow, not to be long-winded about it, but I really would love to equip faith leaders to facilitate conversations that are wayfinding. What do we believe as a church? How will we move forward? What types of policy issues are we going to make? LGBTQ inclusion is a huge thing for a lot of churches right now, and pastors are struggling to facilitate these conversations within their church. But also, everything is not a political issue. Sometimes folks just disagree. And that type of resentment and suspicion is so detrimental also. And so I want to equip pastors to facilitate brave conversations, but also then go on and teach their congregants through whatever means they do, small groups, Sunday school classes, whatever is their modus operandi. I don't know if that's the right term, but their way of communicating, but they'll receive tools to train their people also in how to use mindful improv thinking for brave conversations.
Mindful improv thinking. It's starting here, and it's going to take over the country and the world in the next few years.
I hope so. I would really love for us to learn how to do things that make sense that we care about. Like I, I have really found in my, I have just been determined to talk with people from so many different political perspectives on things like gun violence, on things like immigration, on things like foster care, on things like education. And it's like, for the most part, what people tell me is, I mean, I can't say this on Facebook because people like hate me. Like, but I mean, I know that we need to have like gun control. Like, I know that we like need to have. And so it's like people are willing in when they don't feel defensive.
Yeah.
To open up and have a real human person conversation, you know? So anyhow, all this to say, I would really love, it is like my deepest desire that mindful improv thinking could help us make the world braver, kinder, and safer through like real needle moving policy reform, like real tangible felt things in schools, in churches, in our communities. Like, we can do this. We are human people. And like over and over and over, I see people be people of love. When they're not defensive, they can be loving.
I think that could be and will be so huge for, I mean, what a perfect time to bring that up. Like you said, coming into another fun year of election conversation. Yeah, that'll be, I'm sure that'll be top of mind for everybody. So I hope you're able to grow that. And I mean, I want to help push it out as best as I can. So, I mean, this is,
thank you.
And just the passion that you have in your voice for what you're doing and how deeply you believe in it. It's so inspiring to see that.
Thank you so much.
True. Yeah. I mean, you love it. Like you could just feel you're all in on it. And I think that just pulls people in. I'm sure people listening or watching this are thinking the same thing. So I just appreciate you so much, Andrea, for coming on. I'm glad we made this happen. I'm glad you have so many great things that you have planned in the future. And you're motivating because you just seem like you are the perfect person for average to savage. You are in full on savage mode, which can be seen as just growth and continuing to bring people along that journey. I love it.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I am really honored to do this and I appreciate your help in getting the word out.
We're going to keep getting the word out. I love it. And thanks for everybody for watching or listening. And we will see you next week. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast and leave a comment if you enjoyed the show. To follow on social media, at Matt Scaletti on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and LinkedIn. Feel free to shoot me a message, reach out. I'd love to hear feedback and wishing you an amazing rest of your week.